Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
And right here on LA Talk Radio, we have hit our 6th year anniversary. As of the 15th of May, 2015, we have been on the air for 6 years. And it's been quite a run. And you are listening, of course, to LA Talk Radio. This is The Writer's Block. I am your host, and have been for the last 6 years, Jim Christina, in with Bobby Jean Bell, who has been the co-host for the last 6 and a half years or 6 years. Hi, Bobby Jean.
Hi, we've read some wonderful books.
And we have read some books. Oh, my
authors.
Gosh.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. And we were just talking before the show went on, and we've discovered that if we like the first 3 chapters and we like the last 3 chapters, we're pretty much going to like the whole book. And that comes about by rereading. Yeah. You have to go back and reread because you miss so much in the book. You forget so much, you know, at the front of the book when you're in the middle of it. So you have to go back and reread some of the chapters. So now our guest can get the perplexed look off of her face. Aha! You have a secret, says he. Let me do this real quick because we've gotten one or two now requests. Tuscany Bay Books is running. We're going to be running ads for you write your own ad up to 60 seconds for a title you want advertised on this show. It costs you $25. You send me a request at jimchristina@yahoo.com. And if you want to have your book advertised on the show, it's only a 60-second spot. We do the ads live, so write a good ad and make sure you include the name of your book, which always helps, and your name, and then PayPal only. So if you send a PayPal to jchristina@tuscanybaybooks.com, we'll get you on the ad with the live read of your ad, and it goes out on a podcast, so it's in perpetuity. And it's there for all to see. And we have now one guy wants to run for a number of shows.
That's really cool.
So it's a really good deal for new writers and writers, older writers to boot. If they want their names of their books and their writing out there, we certainly can give them the opportunity. That being said, our guest tonight, I have to say this because I'm not going to give your name yet because you're very special. I have just read an article about Hilton Head, South Carolina. You guys have a bunch of copperheads running around there.
Oh, I have not read that article.
and I guess one lady was out walking her dog and thought she stepped on a sticker, and it snake got her 3 times in the foot.
Oh, my gosh.
And according to your Humane Society there in Hilton Head, the copperheads are really bad this year.
Oh, maybe so.
So keep your eyes peeled.
Yeah, we live on the marsh, and I haven't seen that. So no snakes that I've seen, so I guess I'm just lucky.
Yeah, my sister-in-law's dog got bit in the nose. She lives in North Carolina. She lives Greenville or Greensburg. I don't know. Someplace
Greenville, probably.
She lives in the Triad over by the airport. Okay. But, yeah, the copperheads and the rattlesnakes are bad because she lives right on the edge of a forest.
Right. Here is our gators. We love our gators. But you got to be careful around the gators.
I know.
Small dog things.
The voice you are listening to is from Miss Carrie Peresta. She is a writer that lives, apparently, in South Carolina at Hilton Head. And she is our guest for this evening. And she, let me give you a little bit of her bio. She's publishing credits include a popular newspaper and e-zine humor column, The Lighter Side. And her debut novel, The Hunting, inspirational women's fiction, Pen L Publishing, released in 2013. Before starting to write full-time, she spent 25 years in advertising as an account manager, creative director, and copywriter. She is past chapter president of the Maryland Writers Association and a current member and presenter of Hilton Head Island Writers. Network and the Sisters in Crime organization. Recently, she worked as an editor and contributor for Island Communications, a small local publishing house. Her magazine articles have been published in Local Life magazine, The Bluffton Breeze, Lady Cow, Lowcountry, and Island Events magazine. Carrie's next book, The Deadening Contemporary Fiction Psychological Suspense, released this year, February 2021, with Level Best Books. She is in the process of editing her next manuscript for submission. Please welcome, with a rousing row of applause, for Ms. Carrie Peresta. Hey, we spare no expense on this show, Carrie.
I'm telling you, I love that applause.
Well, this is usually where we come in with thanks for the clap.
Thanks for the clap. Oh, I didn't even get that. Sorry.
Well, you did now.
Inappropriate.
Well, of course it's inappropriate, but we do a lot of inappropriate things on this show. Okay, your book, The Deadening, interesting read. Take a few seconds and kind of fill us in on what the story is.
Okay, here is a concise summary. The Deadening, the long and short of it is the story of the deadening and the resurrection of a woman's soul. Olivia Callahan married young for all the wrong reasons. She was unaware that the man she'd married was a rager and a controller and thought that giving her husband the lead in every decision, almost every thought, was normal. She's quite content, but he isn't. And she finds out after 20 years of marriage that he wants out. She's shocked. She had no clue that he was unhappy. They separate. He goes to live in a crappy apartment in Ellicott City, and she stays in the home. Olivia tries her best to keep life normal for her daughters, but she's crazy. She doesn't know how to live without him. She takes them by herself on a vacation to Hilton Head, where else, where she meets a man who gives her the attention that she'd been missing. She accepts an invitation to his home in another town a few weeks later and ends up, after this bad decision, in the bushes, dumped at Mercy Hospital in Richmond, Virginia, barely breathing, as a Jane Doe. No ID, no nothing. When she wakes from a coma, she realizes she can't move, she can't see, but she can hear everything around her. She is terrified. She has no idea what happened to her. She has no memory. And furthermore, when she is recognized, her family can't believe she's the same woman, because her injury had totally rewired her personality. The Deadening is the story of Olivia's journey back to her life. And when she finds it, she is shocked. Now she has a decision to make. Does she really want that life back?
Aha. Uh-huh. And we were shocked reading the book.
That's good. I'm going for shock.
Many times.
It's actually the way you wrote her character was really interesting, in the fact that watching her recover and regain little by little, inch by inch, as she comes back from, well, primarily from the dead, because that's pretty much where she was.
I
can imagine her listening to everything that was going on in the hospital around her and not being able to move her arms, move her legs, move her eyes even. Mm-hmm. She was like totally locked in, and of course she was in a coma of some sort, I think that really happens to people. So you did a wonderful job of putting that out there, so people actually could kind of get the feeling of what it was like to be incapacitated, yet know what's going on around you.
Right. Scary, so, and creepy.
It's got to be scary. It's got to be.
Yeah.
Bobby, you look like...
Well, I was
like
going to say, she something. Also has an acute sense of smell.
She does.
And I found it really interesting, as everything that Jim just said. But she's first person. You write her character in the first person.
Right.
And so, everything that she experiences, we experience with her, from totally, you know, trying to speak and realizing she can't speak, all of those frustrations, because her mind is actually active, but she can't get anything to function.
Right.
But we experience the smells around her in the hospital, and then of course as she begins to heal and come home and all. I have a friend who had amnesia after surgery and coming out of anesthesia, And she never regained the family memories and things. She had to totally pick up where she was. Mm-hmm. And I kept thinking it'd be really, I never really spoke with her a lot about that. And you must have done a lot of research to know how to make this very believable.
Well, let me tell you, can I tell you where the idea came from?
Absolutely. That was okay. Going to be a question. So go ahead.
I was at a book signing for my first book. And it was 12 tables of authors in a library, in a room, waiting for people to drift by and just at least read the back cover and hopefully buy a book. And so there was one table on the other side of the room that got all the business. Everybody flocked around her table. She was this energetic, sparkling personality, just the kind of person that attracts other people. And I just got frustrated sitting there with nobody coming to my table or anybody else's table. And so I just walked over and I just looked at her and got through the throng of people and said, "What is it about you that is so special?" And she said, "Well, let me tell you, I was in a wreck 6 years ago. I was in a coma for 6 months. They thought that I was going to die. They were just about to pull the plug. And so when I awoke from that coma, I was like this." She said, "I used to be shy. I used to be a wallflower, but after the coma, I was a completely different person." She says, "I can't stop talking to people, and I guess they like it because they look around, they're all buying my book." And so I left, and that was the idea. It was planted right then.
So you went out and had an accident to get your...
No, I don't do quite that deep of research.
I have to say that we have to be very careful talking about this novel because there are so many little hidden Easter eggs and all kinds of stuff. And giving it away would be so very easy.
Yeah.
And so I really don't want to do that. Suffice it to say that Olivia tends to have really bad choice of men.
Bad judgment. Yep.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And she goes from one to another, and it's kind of like interesting to watch her come out of her shell and start realizing that what she's doing is not really good for anybody, especially her.
And especially her daughters.
And yes, and especially her daughter. Mm-hmm. And to find out that her very first child. Well, okay, I'll stop there.
You can't go there. You'll have to read the book to find out about your.
Spoiler alert.
I had to go back and reread. I was like, what?
I
had to
go back. I know. It's like, oh my gosh. You know, there's so much in this book that you want to talk about, but so little you can because there's so many spoiler alerts in it. So
I think one thing that was very important in writing her character was that when a woman grows up in a home with an absent father or no father,
right,
or one that is distant and does not give the appropriate type of affection, well, that little girl grows up not understanding what a normal, healthy man looks like. So she is attracted to the wrong kind of men because she never had it. So that happens more often than not. There are so many people I've run across, especially since writing this book, that say, "Oh, man, I understand." Yeah. And they say, "I'm going to give this book to so-and-so. I'm going to give this to so-and-so," because that happens to women. They don't know what they're doing. They don't see themselves, and they're victims, basically, until they wake up.
Yeah. I have personally known a few guys that are like her ex-husband in that they were abusers and manipulators and whatever you can call him, they were one.
Yes.
And they're not nice people, and they aren't fun to read about.
Well, they don't have any feelings, really. I mean, I think they do. There's a difference between a psychopath and a sociopath, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But, Carrie, I have to say, they make great villains. And it's fun to write them. And I know it is because I write them.
And I have dated several, so.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yes, I instantly understand. But I have to say that every writer I've ever met, suspense writers and mystery writers especially, love to write their villains. We can sit around and talk about writing villains. And you probably know that, Jim.
Oh, I we have talked about it before on the show. I love writing Becca. You know, I'll tell you why I think it is. I think it is because you can put out everything that you always wanted to say bad about anybody.
Yes.
And you can put it down on paper and talk about a guy that doesn't exist.
Mm. Oh, well, I talk about, you know, mine is a compilation of characters that I've known that, and they inspire this man. So mine are born out of true experiences, but then I stretch and pull and massage that. And I play the what if game. What if this is a lot of what ifs.
Bobby.
Go ahead. You'll get
a minute.
Okay. I was just going to say that also, I know we'll get it a little bit more into process a little bit later, but it was so interesting how you had the other characters in the book describe her because she, you know, she has no perception of how the rest of the world saw her. And I think it's so interesting, even her husband describing her, friend Carrie, Callie describing her, her mom, her daughters not recognizing her. And I had to think as a writer, that had to be kind of fun for you to let us see her through all of their eyes and see the difference
in the way
that you write her going forward. That had to be kind of fun.
That was one of the comments I was going to make, was that every character you had describing her had a different view of who she was.
Right.
Which was really interesting.
And it was fun, but every one of those characters have their own personality and their own filter, right?
Of course.
So they are going to see her differently. But the bottom line is, she was just difficult to be around because she was so passive.
Right.
And they all liked her, just felt sorry for her because they saw that she was being abused and kind of neglected in her marriage. And her daughters were also clueless because they were used to that kind of behavior. They didn't know any different. They didn't.
Right.
They thought all families were like that.
Right.
And so, but they, you know how people are. They don't want to confront something like that to somebody.
Right.
So when she arises, she has post-coma aphasia. I don't want to give spoilers either, but she can't remember.
Right.
She can't remember how she was. And so, but I'm exploring in the second book, she's trying to regain those early memories. And I wonder if even at that point, because she was in such denial and she was such a victim, if she could even see herself objectively and how she was. So it was interesting.
Okay, brief comment before we go to break. I had amnesia once. It was like after 4 martinis. And it was horrible because I didn't remember a thing the next day. You are listening to LA Talk Radio. This, of course, is the Writer's Block. And we'll be back right after this brief message from LA Talk Radio.
Jim Christina here for LA Talk Radio. And if you've ever thought that you could be a radio host, well, now is certainly your opportunity. Go to www.latalkradio.com, find the link that says be a host, and follow the instructions. You know, everybody's got something to say, and if you've got a show that you think needs to be heard, how about you link up with us? Because we've got 50-minute shows available every day of the week, plus Sundays. So how about giving us a try? That's latalkradio.com, and listen every Thursday, 6 p.m. Pacific, for the Writer's Block, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Back tonight with our guest, Miss Carrie Peresta, and her book, The Dead Thing. And if you want to talk to Carrie, the number in the studio is 323-205. And there we go. And there we go. We're back. And if you want to call and talk to Carrie, the number here in the studio is 323-203-0815. And you can call and you can actually talk right to Carrie herself. And there she is. She's sitting here looking at us going, oh, okay, yay. The lady is, she's truly inspirational. To put together all of that from, personal experience, I get. What a great story. And it rolls and then it stops and it kind of flattens out a bit and then it rolls some more and then it stops and kind of flattens out a bit and then it rolls again and you don't know where they're coming. So you can't stop reading it, you know, and Bobby and I, we discussed on Tuesday, we read a book a week And some books, they're a chore. Some books are hard to get through. Some are, but this one wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
And we're getting better and better writers on this show all the time. So,
aww.
Well, yeah.
I take that as a compliment.
Well, please do, because it is.
Well, you know, the best thing for a writer to hear is, I couldn't put it down.
Yeah, I couldn't.
Well, yeah.
And then I was sorry when it was done. And I'm excited to hear that there's another, you know, that there's, I almost didn't want to finish it.
And your segue to the other book, to the newer book, was well done. It was well done because you could have ended it right there, or you can go on. Right. So you have a choice there. Which was really nice, because some books kind of lead you down that path and they stop and say, check out the next adventure. You're coming in the next book in March of 2022.
Right.
You didn't do that. You left us off. You ended the story, this story. If you wanted to stop right there, you could have.
Mm-hmm.
But you also left it wide open for going forward, which I liked a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So congratulations.
Because my editor, my publisher, it was supposed to be a standalone.
Uh-huh.
And then after I wrote it, my editor said, this is a perfect segue for the next book. So I think you ought to consider doing a series. And so I contracted to do two more. And it's been so much fun. Yeah, because I already know the characters. I didn't have to just start over from scratch. Now I can go deeper into what happens.
Wait until they start writing the book for you.
Yes.
And that will happen.
I have a question, but for some reason I've never asked this in 6 years. I've never asked this of an author.
Okay.
But we have a detective and he's a male. We have a neurosurgeon. He's a male. Did you ever consider making either of those female? Like, how would this story be different if we had a female detective?
Oh, that's a very good question.
That is a good question.
I'm surprised you never asked that before.
I know. I thought, why this book? What is it about this book?
I think the reason that it just didn't fit with my story, because I wanted Olivia's mother to have a romantic interest.
Okay, so then
And that fit. I mean, it's kind of maybe cliche, but it really fit. And I liked Dr. Grayson Sturgis.
He's wonderful. Yeah.
Olivia needed a calm, normal man.
Uh-huh. Yeah, she needed it. Yeah.
Was supportive and honest and would not lie to her or let her down. And he was that man. She's not quite sure. She's still not quite sure about Hunter.
Right. And right.
Even though I think that he is going to end up being a good, normal man, because I'm not sure about the trajectory of the character in the next mm-hmm. book yet.
Mm-hmm.
She still doesn't trust herself
mm-hmm.
or him. So.
Well, and he, by all rights, he might, as much as he's attracted to her, he knows she's got, she's coming, it might not be the best partner to have for life right now. he realizes, better than anybody, really, all of kind of what's, let her get herself, together and get the girls, let them all get back on solid ground.
Rediscover themselves, right? Because they
haven't
built all
the
relationships, really.
Well, he understands it, but he doesn't like it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's that male ego coming through.
As a typical guy. We have no brains other than below our belt line.
Did you have another question, Jim?
No, actually, I wanted to get into some process.
Okay.
So when did you start writing, and what made you start writing?
Well, I was a single mom for a while, and so I had to work. I had a degree in advertising, so that's what I did, and that's how I made the money. But I was always the go-to person for copy. If anybody ever wanted some promotional copy, ad copy, brochure copy done, I was the person, and it just fell that way. And I started thinking after I remarried and got to quit my job and we moved, and he kind of took the wheel and I had this time on my hands and I thought, what do I really want to do? And so writing was it. And I just started out with a letter to the editor. They loved it. I ended up doing the humor column for that newspaper for almost 2 years. And that was so much fun, writing in 800 word sound bites. And it was everybody in town loved it. It was a bright spot, and I was a little bit of a local celebrity, and the writing bug just hit me, and I thought, well, I'm going to try a novel. Now, that was a much longer, convoluted journey, and I learned the publishing industry from the ground up, and there's still so much to learn.
Oh, absolutely.
Right, and so I've learned process. I've written so much more now. I'm such a much better writer. But that was, I started in 2008. My first book was published in 2013, and then it took me, you know, until this year to finally get my next one, in my opinion, final enough with a professional editor that I hired and different things for it to see the light of day. And it's been through three or four editings, and it's been a great learning process for me.
That brings up a very good question that I have never asked a writer since we've had this show on the air.
So excited.
When you get back edited copies of your book from an editor, editor one, two, three, or four, or if it's the same editor, they just keep editing, do you always like the changes they suggest or make?
No, not always. Of course, I don't. But because I was in advertising and you have to just roll with the punches and you do what the client wants, I'm very okay with criticism. And I look and I see, okay, well, what do I really think about this? Let's get your ego out of the way and any hurt feelings and just look at what the end result needs to be. Mm-hmm. So I was very flexible. And if I really wanted to stand for something, I find that they're very open to letting something stay in if it's
sure.
a significant sticking point. But I'm very open to making the book better because I think collaboration is a great thing.
Do you allow your editor to play with your dialogue? Because I don't.
Not too much. I would, if they had significant changes and had a reason, I would definitely listen to that. But they don't too much. You know, I like concise, fast dialogue.
Me too.
I don't like purple prose. I'm not a literary author. I like it to be to the point and to go fast. And some editors do not like that style of writing. So no. In that case, I would disagree with them.
There's a lot of editors and there's a lot of writers that like to put a lot of extraneous words into a story that need not be there. Okay. Bobby, you and I have discussed this, I don't know how many times. and we've had a lot of writers on here that we've read their books and we go, man, this is a 600-page book. It could have been a 320-page book.
Right. You know? They're fond of, I find writers so fond. Me too, until I started realizing that's just dragging down the action. When I found my genre, which was suspense. Suspense demands a fast pace.
Right.
And like historical fiction doesn't. Sometimes women's fiction doesn't necessarily. You know.
I think it depends on the story.
Well, mm-hmm. True.
Yeah, you know, because there's a lot of historical fiction that's based on fact that actually took a while to happen. It wasn't like overnight. So,
mm-hmm. Right. But what I was going to say is I think adjectives are overused.
Okay. Oh, absolutely.
Oh, my gosh. I've read sentences that are like three lines long, and they must have four adjectives in the same sentence. And I just want to go, you know, that is so redundant. And it takes me out of the thought.
Exactly.
It slows me down.
Exactly. And I wrote a passage today, actually, which prompted this question, a guy got shot and the guy shot his brother first and then shot him. Well, it didn't kill him. His name is Thomas. The bullet missed his heart, but it's now going down into his diaphragm and he's going to be dead in a minute or two. Oh. And he's trying to reach his brother. He's trying to get to his brother so he can hold his hand while he dies.
Oh.
And he finally makes it. And his comment is, he quietly says to himself words that their mother taught them, and he says, "We commend our souls. We commend our souls to heaven." And then he just lets go.
Right.
But it's the action of him crawling to his brother, and I thought, God, is this too long? Is this gonna, you know, too many adjectives? But I decided no, I'm gonna leave it in because I liked the way it came out.
Yeah, because that was a slow scene. You can just see the camera zooming in.
Right.
Focusing maybe on his hand that's clawing the dirt. Yeah,
right.
Yeah. So that I understand that very much.
But I also understand the overuse of adjectives and flowery sentences that really have no right being there.
Or and, describing the inside of a room for like five pages. And the floral wallpaper, you know, going on forever.
Or just describing a character the same way over.
Right.
Each time you give us a little more information about his size or his hair color or, you know, his mannerisms. We didn't get the same. We got another little picture of Monty and Sophia. I mean, all of the characters each time you gave us another puzzle piece. And I think that has to be somewhat challenging as an author that you have to think differently than what you thought, you know, 20 pages ago. And you have to have something new to say because you're creating them in flesh and blood for us, the reader, to really articulate, be able to articulate who they are, how they move, how they talk, what's the rhythm of their speech and such. Mm-hmm. And we've read books where they use the same, it's like the same red hair, you know, it's the same red hair every time the character is on.
Yeah, a copper-colored hair throughout or whatever.
Well, with a character like Monty, you almost had to do that. You had to put him together in pieces because as you went down through the story, as her memory got there, it was different parts of Monty she remembered and different pieces of Monty that she remembered too. So that was really coolly done. I liked that a lot.
Thank you so much. I appreciate
the first time she sees him, and he comes, is it in the hospital? And she says he's as tall as the door frame.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, wow, what a great, you know, that seems so simple to think, to write that way. But
we can all understand
how tall a door frame. It was, you know.
Sure. 7 feet. There you go.
I've read all my life, read books. And I think because I've read so many books and the things that I've picked out about the books that I disliked, that I avoid doing that, never possible.
Mm-hmm. Right. So,
thank you. I appreciate you picking up on that.
Oh, no. You know, it's like I used to tell my employees, pick the worst boss you ever had and don't be like him.
Yeah.
That kind of works sometimes.
Yeah.
Anyway, we will be right back with you. This is LA Talk Radio. You are listening to The Writer's Block. We are here with Kelly Peresta and her book, Deadening. And we'll be back with you just after a brief chat or brief word from Out West.
Here at the Out West Shop, we're passionate about the American West, the truth and the myth. We're purveyors of fine Western goods. We scout for unique and distinctive apparel, accessories, home decor, and general merchandise that are a reflection of the Western lifestyle. We hunt for unique artisans and craftsmen who are inspired to create decorative art you can wear based on their own love for the story of the West. We round it up and bring it to you. Check out OutWestShop.com when you need anything Western.
And we are back. If you want to call and talk to Kelly, she's right here, or Carrie. She's right here at Carrie, yeah. And her the number here in the studio is 323-203-0815. You can call and actually talk to her. We're looking at her. She's an attractive lady. She's waving. I'm smiling. Wait. Okay, on to process. Bobby, have you got a process question? Because I certainly do.
No. Well, you go. You go first.
Okay, when you first started writing, did you have a time that you wanted to sit down and write during the day, or did you just catch as catch can for a while until you got the rhythm of your writing down?
I think when I first started, it was just as a hobby and I just did it whenever. But as I got into becoming a serious author, the morning is when my brain is spinning on all cylinders. I can just throw out the most creative, cool stuff that amazes me. If I could possibly get up at 5 or 6 every day, it would be genius. But I managed to get to my laptop at about 8:30 or 9. I usually write till noon or 1 every day. So I definitely use the morning as my writing time.
So 3 or 4 hours a day, you try to do it. You don't have a word count in mind. You just try to stay busy for that 3 to 4 hours.
I have a minimum word count, a minimum of 1,000 words a day. And then I have a weekly goal of 5,000 words a week. And sometimes if I'm in the zone, I'll do about 3,000 words in a day, and then I may take a day off.
Huh. We had a writer on, Ken, what was his last name? He's going to be back on the show, actually. He was in twice, once with Ken Dacey.
Oh. Ken. Oh.
You know who I'm talking about. Anyway,
I do know.
He has a goal of 10,000 words a week.
Wow. That's a
2,000 words a day. And he sticks to it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how he can, but the guy's prolific. I mean, the guy kicks out books like you can't believe.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the ones we read were pretty good, but I don't know about all of them because we haven't read them all. But
well, that's really a lot. And I think if I had more books going, maybe I'm just kind of getting into the zone where I have deadlines and more than one to do. And so I am on a deadline now. And this next book is due the end of September, and I'm already at 60,000 words. So I'm a very fast writer, I think. But the thing is, the first draft is kind of jumbled. Story down on the page. And I don't spend a whole lot of time editing much because it slows me down. After I get it done, then I'll spend a month or two editing, going back and reworking, thinking about the plot arc, making sure it's crisp. There's a lot of redundancies that you don't see the first time through. I do word finds. I'm a great overuser of hands, eyes, different words that I have found are redundant in my book. So I have to take all those out and exchange the words.
Well, when you write a first person, I've would be a word that you would use a lot as a contraction, at least.
You know, I really try to avoid. I will start with an action that the character is doing and avoid using "I did this," "I did that."
Interesting.
Okay.
I mix them up, and also short sentences versus long sentences. They're not all the same length. You'll notice. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. I did notice that. Go ahead.
I have a question. Since you're a suspense writer, are there some things that you really need to be sure that you're including? This is the right kind of question. You know, in this book, for instance, when she first comes home, she's aware of some shadowy characters maybe in the trees at her house.
Mm-hmm.
You give us some things that I would say are suspense touches. When you're writing suspense, do those just flow as you go? Or do you have to think about, you know, there wasn't much suspense in that chapter. I got to go add some, you know. How do you keep it suspenseful?
I think my mind is just naturally dark. I noticed that at an early age, and so did my teachers. It just goes with the story. It's just something I put myself inside the character's head. That's one reason that I like to do the protagonist in first person, because I can feel her. I can channel her better. That way it's like I'm talking and not feeling it. And that's just what I feel, that kind of fear, because she's full of fear and she's uncertain of herself and she sees things around every bush. And yeah, I think about heightening the suspension. But I think it mostly flows out of character development, and also suspense is action, 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 action. It's not so much the character, but psychological suspense gets inside the head of the characters.
Different story,
So it's not so much. I can't stand books that are all action. Like, I'm not a fan of political thrillers, things that have bombs in every scene. I'm just like, okay, I need to take a breath somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you say it rolls and then it's calm and it rolls, well, I do that to give the reader a rest. There's got to be a place where you can just be normal, where you can just enjoy her beautiful yard. I love
this
yard.
Right, right, right.
Yes, her house is like a character in this book.
Yes.
And absolutely. I was happy that she actually really enjoyed it, even in her new persona, that she didn't realize she did so much work, but she knew the names of the trees, and she, you know, I was happy that she was really still happy with that house.
It was such
a wonderful place.
Deep, intrinsic enjoyment of beauty in her soul, and that comforted her. And I lived in Maryland for 5 years. So they all had those kind of houses. It was quite an experience, Maryland horse country, because they all had these old English two-story historical Civil War houses bookended by these two huge brick. And it was everybody's dream to have 5 acres, a split rail fence, and a restored antebellum type of home.
Right. So. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have a friend of mine that lives in Marysville, Maryland.
Okay.
And Millersville. Right outside of Baltimore, Annapolis.
Okay. Okay.
And he has one of those homes. It's like brick fireplaces on either side. It's a sandwich house, he calls it.
Plus he has
an old barn out there that he's refurbished on the inside.
Historic barns. That's a big deal in Maryland.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And he's a split rail fence that is, almost 6 feet tall. He added, like, a lot more rails to it because he has horses in there. So.
Right.
But, I know exactly what you're talking about. I could actually visualize her house.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know, having seen houses like that. Yeah, yeah.
Totally.
Another dialogue question for you. These coming for me as a writer. Uh-huh. When you write your dialogue, when you're finished for a scene, do you go back and read it to yourself out loud to see if it flows?
Sometimes, if I'm uncertain about it, most of the time it just flows. Most of the time I'm in the conversation, I'm in the room, I can hear it, and it just fits. But if I'm uncertain about it, I indeed do read it out loud. And if it's, it doesn't disjointed.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, I like the way your dialogue ran. It flowed, but it flowed in a staccato type fashion in some places because that's how people talk.
Right. Exactly. I don't use a lot of the and.
Right. And they cut each other off and they, right. you know, conversations are like. Works of art, actually, if you really look at them. And to write a conversation correctly, it really takes work.
Mm-hmm.
And once you get it, you got it.
Right.
So I
enjoy writing dialogue. I love that. I don't want the whole book to be dialogue, but I enjoy it myself when I read a book that's written like
and
that.
And it's the little tricks that your characters do, not only in your book, but in all authors' books, that defines who these characters are. You can tell who a character is by the little things that he does.
Yes.
For instance, I'm writing a character now. He's a Texas Ranger, a real guy, J.B. Armstrong.
Uh-huh.
He steals his boss's horse because he likes it better than his. And he grabs a mule and he's on the road to go catch this guy. And he stops 3 miles out of town and he notches the right front horseshoe of the mule. And the left rear horseshoe of his horse. And he says, and all of the horse prints on this road, these you're going to be able to recognize. I'll always know if somebody steals my horse where it is. And so it's a little thing like that, mm-hmm. you know. And I appreciate
like to always give my characters little flaws.
Absolutely.
Kind of human, right? And so Sophie is this wonderful, vivacious, faith-filled Christian, right? But she cannot give up smoking.
Yeah, I know. She likes earrings. She has a thing for different, you know, dangly earrings. And jingling bracelets. We sort of know when she's entering a room. She's a delightful character. Sarah, the nurse Sarah, what a wonderful character.
Aww.
With her squishy shoes and just the things that you know, she's only in the book kind of in the beginning, but... Oh, what an important role she plays.
Oh, yeah.
And what a love, you know, her heart is just, she just has a joyous love heart. And she knows right away that Olivia's going to be fine.
Mm-hmm.
And she knows it, just she's just stepping out on faith with it, but she knows it. And their relationship's very special. And I think you have this wonderful way of even with a minor character, imbuing that character with distinction and with life, whether they're a good guy or a bad, you know, I mean, you give us enough detail that we've really fleshed them out very nicely.
Right.
Thank you.
Hank Tuff, we're going to do one more real quick break and we'll be back with you. You're listening to LA Talk Radio. This is, of course, The Writer's Block. And we'll be right back after this short word from Tuscany Bay Books. Congratulations, you finally finished that book. Now what are you going to do with it?
Well, as a new writer, you probably do what all new writers do, stick in the drawer with the other six or seven. Well, why not this time do something a little different? Why not get a hold of Black Dog Publishing and our fine imprint of Tuscany Bay Books? See, we can get that book out of the drawer. We can proofread it. We can edit it. We can format it. We can publish it. We can print it. We can copyright it. And we can get it on the shelf so your friends, your neighbors, your relatives, hell, even a person you don't know or two or three might want to buy a copy. It's all what it's about. And all of this for less than the cost of your firstborn. So why not give us a shot? BlackDogPublishing.co, TuscanyBayBooks.com, your answer to getting your book published. And right now, we're probably the best at what we do in this industry. Black Dog Publishing, Tuscany Bay Books.
And we are back with our writer of the evening, Kerry Peresta, talking about her book and The Deadening. And as we're almost out of time, Bobby Jean, I believe it is your turn to ask the question.
All right. So do you experience writer's block? And if you do, how do you get around it? And if you don't experience it, what do you think about it?
I experience writer's block when I've had a sleepless night, or I've drunk too much wine, or when I'm so tired, I can't. You know, sometimes I just go to the beach and I just say, forget it, because I'm not going to be in a good mood. But on the other hand, when I sit down and make myself write, something comes out that ends up being pretty decent, which surprises me. But to tell you the truth, I rarely experience writer's block. Only, okay, this is what I do. If I reach a point in my book where there's a plot issue, where I think, okay, what's going to happen now? Where is my protagonist going to go? There's twists in the road. What are those twists going to be? Why? What I do is I take a break from my manuscript and I pick up a writing book. Like, the recent one I picked up, of course, I can't remember the name now, The Secrets to Something. It's fabulous. And it talks about signposts that you have to hit along the way. And that inspires me again. And I'm going, oh, I got to put that in there. And I'll go back and rework. And then it gets me excited about it again. But for the most part, I don't have a problem sitting down and starting to write.
Jim, I have one other question for her.
Go for it.
You are a part of a number of different writing groups or organizations. And yes, since so many of our listeners are new writers, how have you found them to be effective for you?
Oh, I wouldn't have ever been a writer or made it without groups. I think writers are one of the most supportive, encouraging people I've ever met. I started out going to writing conferences. There was one in my area, and I met these wonderful New York Times bestseller authors that were humble, so humble, and so generous with their time and with their encouragement and with their, here's my card. If you need anything, call me. And I've got so many of those people that are my resources for realistic detectives, for psychological information. And I've enlisted all of those people from conferences. And also they have agents there that you can show your work, but the groups are the support. Mm-hmm. I think a critique group is probably the most important thing for a writer, where they can get together and share what they're writing with each other and they learn together. And they can also keep up with writing events that are going on in the communities. Sisters in Crime, that's a wonderful community for suspense writers. It's mostly women, but we allow men to enter now. There's men in there now. Reluctantly. But it's a very supportive, fun group of women. Mm-hmm. And Mystery Writers of Association is the big dog for suspense writers. And I haven't reached that point yet where I can be a full member. You have to have a certain number of sales and published books before you maybe you've looked into that. And the other one, that's local. I try to be involved in all of the local stuff here because they love local authors and they want to support it. So yeah, very important, very important. Because if you're isolated, you're just going to quit. You're just not going to keep writing. So.
Right. Mm-hmm. Which is, I think a good reason that the show has gone on as long as it has, because it gives writers a forum
Yeah.
Gives new writers a forum, especially, and established writers like yourself, and writers that are on the fence about whether to keep writing or stop writing.
Oh, yeah.
It gives everybody a forum to talk about their work. And as we discussed the other night, writers love talking about themselves and their work.
Yes.
and so, I mean, you know, you can't get away from that. And if you're a real writer, that's what you do. You talk about your stuff.
Well, yeah. And you like to tell stories. Everything's a story.
You bounce them off people all the time. You can get them to sit long enough to listen to a paragraph. You can get them to listen to a page.
Yep, absolutely.
So I
found you have to keep evolving as a writer. And so
yes.
You need other writers to pull out of you more, because you got to keep learning all the time as a writer.
Oh, sure. Sure. And the more you write, the better you get.
Yes, absolutely.
And with that being said, we are out of time.
Oh.
So if you would tell our listeners where they can contact you, web page, Facebook, email, whatever you'd like to give them.
They could Google my name and everything pops up, but I'm at kerryperesta.net, kerryperesta.net. And I'm on Amazon. My book's on Amazon. I'm on Instagram, Facebook. I have a Facebook author page. Everything pops up. And you can buy my book wherever books are sold online,
right.
and Barnes & Noble.
And you're on Goodreads too, yeah?
Yep, I am. And I'm on NetGalley until the end of May for those professional reviewers out there.
Oh, okay then. Thank you, Kerry, so much for giving us your time. I know it's late there. But we always appreciate it when East Coast writers will spend the time with us, because we know it gets late. And they're usually way past our cocktail hour. So
thank you so much for the opportunity.
It was our pleasure. Our pleasure, truly. Ms. Kerry Peresta, thank you again for joining us. Next week, Bobby Jean, who do we have?
Oh, my goodness. We have singer-songwriter award winner Mary Kay. She's been with us before, but it's been a while. And I believe her husband will also be joining us, Gary Holt. And I've been a co-host on Gary's show for 6 years. So it'll be kind of fun to host them both. Mary Kay has a new album called Frontier, and we'll be playing some of the songs from that and
Correct.
Get to hear the backstories, and it'll be fun having them with us.
And I like talking to singer-songwriters, because I are one at one time in my life. So it's interesting to see their take and how they put their music mm-hmm. together. Mm-hmm. That was really informational that we did with John. He came in with his guitar and some Disney Live stuff for us. I just got a great thank you from Kerry. Thank you so much. That was so interesting and fun. I'm so delighted that you like my book. Hoping for a review. Hint, hint. Love you guys. God bless. Okay.
She was quick.
Well, no kidding. Okay, next week we have, of course, Mary Kay and hopefully her husband, Gary. Thank you so much for Ronan Rosner's work on our board. Sam Hassan, the owner of LA Talk Radio. Without him, there would be no Writer's Block. We have Bobby Jean Bell. Thank you so much. Her husband, Jim, that's always been a support. And, of course, we have Russ Avison, our temporal co-host that comes in on the third Thursday of every month. For myself, Jim Christina, and the rest of the crew here at the Writer's Block, the bookie included, thank you so much for joining us, and we are out of here.